Now, Uncommon Sense with Leland Conway on 630 KHOW, Denver's talk station.
Light the fuse and run now, brother, cause you ain't got a lot of time. Don't you act surprised.
Their names are Thomas James and Richard Fierro. Those are the two heroes who attacked, took down, and held at bay the gunman in the Club Q shooting in Colorado Springs on Saturday night, early Sunday morning. Richard Fierro, a military veteran, lunged. When I read the description of what he did, it was actually pretty awesome. He grabs this piece of human trash that goes into this club and starts shooting innocent people, is wearing body armor because he's a coward too. I mean, he's just a coward. He's just a piece of trash. And so Richard Fierro, he grabs him by the body armor on the back, right? And then he drags him to the ground. And they wrestle another guy, Thomas James. They wrestle the rifle away from him. And as he's going for his pistol, Richard Fierro grabs the pistol out of his hand and freaking pistol whips this dude. And they're kicking him and they're hitting him. And they are heroes. Those are the names we'll say. We won't say the name of the dirtbag who did the shooting. But Thomas James and Richard Fierro are American heroes, and God bless them. And God bless anybody who runs into the danger the way these two guys did. So that's pretty awesome. The more information that is coming out about the shooter, the more questions I have about why this situation was ever allowed to happen, why he wasn't prosecuted in the first place when he did his bomb threat a little over a year ago. But we'll get into that a little later in the program. Also, there's already machinations underway in the state legislature to take more of your gun rights, because that is what lefties do. They take advantage. They take advantage of situations like this rather than care about the hurt and care about the victims. They actually use it to further their political agenda. We'll talk about that with constitutional Second Amendment attorney David Kopel in the second hour. Plus some of those questions that I have about why this guy wasn't prosecuted. But I wanted to bring my friend Scott Jennings onto the program. You see him on CNN. He's the voice of sanity, usually one against five on a panel of lefties. He's the guy that holds his own and always has a happy quip. He's a happy warrior. I love him to death for that. He's always got something smart to say, but also he does it in a friendly and loving way, and it's awesome. But I wanted to bring him on because he's incredible with numbers, he's incredible with statistics, and he's got a great idea of, like, why things happen politically, and I wanted to kind of do a little post-mortem on the red trickle. So Scott is with us. Hey, Scott, how are you, sir?
Hey, Leland, good to be with you, man.
You as well, my friend. So I think going into the election, the midterms, a lot of people were expecting a red wave. I think the left was expecting it. I think the right was expecting it. And it really just didn't come out the way a lot of people thought, didn't come out the way a lot of the polls were trending. For once, the polls gave too much credit to conservative candidates. What, in your opinion, happened there?
Well, I think, number one, independent voters did not behave the way we normally expect them to behave. Frankly, I've been in politics for over 20 years now, and it's the first time that independent voters in a midterm broke for the party in power, particularly when you consider that the party in power, the Democrats, led by President Joe Biden, were not popular. The exit polls painted a pretty rough picture. Biden was at about 44% approval. More Americans thought his policies were hurting than helping. The direction of the country, you know, the mood of the country, people were angry and anxious about the economy. Everything was pointing in one direction, and then these independent voters were breaking against the Republicans in all these big races. Not in every race, and right, we can talk about why that is, but in the big Senate races and in a lot of the House races that took place in suburban America, independent voters just stuck with the Democrats despite their misgivings about Biden and the direction of the country.
Why do you think – let's do that. Let's talk about why this happened. Why do you think this happened?
Well, I think in some races, the Republican candidates, candidly, didn't run a very good campaign.
Yeah.
Some of these folks did very little for themselves and expected outside intervention to carry the day. And
yeah.
In some races it did, and in some races it did not. I think, Leland, the candidates who did the best in this election were the ones who built their own personal identity and their own brand. So you take a Greg Abbott in Texas or a Brian Kemp in Georgia, Ron DeSantis in Florida, Mike DeWine in Ohio. These Republicans had no trouble winning large margins of victory in their races. But some of these Republican candidates that frankly hadn't built their own identity and therefore got slapped with some other kind of branding, either by their Democratic opponent or by their own doing, they suffered. Independent voters made them pay for it. And that was a big lesson that I learned out of this election was people want you to be your own person. They don't want you to be a subsidiary of someone else, Donald Trump or anyone else. And I think it's a great lesson for candidates.
Yeah, I think in particular, like Dr. Oz, that race baffled me because the Democrats were running a particularly horrible candidate. And I'm not saying that to make fun of Fetterman's physical issues, but it was irresponsible of his family, his wife, the party to let that guy run for office. He's not capable of holding that office, and he was a particularly horrible candidate. And on top of that, he had particularly horrible policy ideas even before his health issue. But Dr. Oz was a guy I felt like was nominated essentially by Trump specifically because this is a celebrity, and he kind of agrees with me, so celebrity will win the day. And I don't think that's the case. To me, one of the biggest missteps that Dr. Oz made, and he ended up being a better candidate towards the end, but when he went and did that video about the cost of crudité, right, in the grocery store, and most people in Pennsylvania probably pronounce it crudites like I do, right? You know what I mean? Like, it's like, what are you trying to do there? There's a mixed message there. There's clearly an elitism tarnishing what you're trying to achieve as this sort of I'm in touch with the common man. Well, we call that a vegetable tray in Kentucky, where I'm from. You know what I mean? It was weird.
It was weird, and those were some early signs that Oz was going to have trouble connecting. Now, I agree with you. He got better over time, and I do believe he worked really hard, and he got the race very close. But if you listen to his message at the end of the race, it was completely aimed at these independent voters around suburban Philly. You know, he would say things like, we need balance in Washington. We have to throw out the extremes and find the balance and find the compromise and the moderation. You could hear who he was speaking to.
Right.
And Trump showed up at the end of the campaign to remind everybody that he had handpicked Dr. Oz. My understanding is people around the Oz campaign were freaking out when that happened because it sort of stepped on that final crescendo they were building toward, which was to say Oz was actually sort of the more reasonable person in this race. Because as you pointed out, Fetterman is an extremist. He's a radical. Progressive, and Oz was presenting himself as the moderate choice, and Trump came and reminded everybody, now this is my guy, and he's gonna listen to me. And you know, as I mentioned, Biden was sitting at like 44 in the exits. Well, Trump was sitting at 39,
and
which is a lower number and a pretty bad number. And so, in a purple state like Pennsylvania, you know, it cost Dr. Oz the race, I think.
Yeah, I you know, you mentioned Fetterman. He's particularly radical. He's basically, it's weird how much his life patterns Bernie Sanders, right? Like, I mean, he's never had a job until he was lieutenant governor of Pennsylvania. I mean, it was like he lived in his parents' basement. You know, he's the quintessential leftist loafer, you know, and he has that sort of, I wear a Carhartt sweater and that looks like every blue collar worker in Pennsylvania. And it worked. It's weird, don't you think, as somebody who analyzes this stuff, how much optics can play into stuff like this in people's decisions?
Oh, my gosh. I mean, I would hear, like, news pundits and newscasters describe Fetterman as, you know, the blue-collar candidate. I'm like, this guy's literally never had a real job.
I know.
He's never had a job in his life. He's dressing up. He's a cartoon character.
Yeah.
He's a caricature. He's, you know, this is a facade. This is total branding. It's his marketing, but it has nothing to do with who he actually is. And yet, when you have the media covering these races the way they do, they will buy anything, to as long as it's what the Democrats are selling. And so And so in Pennsylvania, it was all in to defend, you know, first of all, it was, you know, Fetterman, he's blue collar. Then when he got his stroke, well, he's fine. Then it was, how dare you make fun of the disabled?
Right.
They ran the gambit. In Georgia, the entirety of the coverage of that race, I mean, everybody turned into the Herschel Walker News Network for 6 weeks.
Right.
And nary a story was run about Raphael Warnock and some of the things going on in his past and in his professional life. So, you know, all these races, just the coverage was just ridiculous, as you pointed out.
Well, speaking of that, though, as a political consultant, you're advising future Republican candidates. How do you overcome that media bias? How do you overcome the fact that every little thing that a Republican will do will be held to full transparent account in the media? And the left-wing candidate can be guilty of the most egregious folly, and there won't be any coverage of it. How would you advise someone who's trying to overcome not just the dark money spending that was on the left, which is ironic because they were trying to get all that out of politics, but the dark money spending it overpowered Republicans 3-1, and then they had this huge in-kind donation from the media across the board in almost every single state. How would you advise someone to struggle through that and be successful?
Well, the biggest deficiency that Republican campaigns have right now is the lack of funds in the candidates' own campaign committees versus what the Democrats do. The most efficient money in politics is what the candidates raise and spend themselves. If you're buying television ads, you get way more bang for your buck if you're buying it as a candidate because they have to sell it to you at the lowest unit rate. But if you're a super PAC, an outside group, they can gouge you, and they do. So in a lot of these Senate races, you know, you're fighting the Democrat money machine. But, you know, it's funny. It used to be Republicans had all the money. Now Democrats have all the money.
Right.
But you're fighting the Democrat money machine. You're fighting the media machine and the media narrative machine. I mean, you really are fighting a two-front war. And in most of the cases this year, Republican campaigns had less money in their own accounts than their Democrat counterpart. That was certainly true in several of the big Senate races. So one of the things the party is going to have to fix is helping these candidates get donations directly to themselves, because the reliance on, you know, whether it's the NRSC or Mitch McConnell's group or the RNC or the, you know, the outside groups that do the House races, the reliance on external independent money means it just doesn't go as far, and it's just not as effective. And so that is step one, in my opinion, because, you know, if you can't communicate at the same level as the opposition, you pile that disadvantage on top of the disadvantage you have with the way the press covers it, I mean, you are running uphill the entire way.
Yeah, we're talking with Scott Jennings, political consultant, CNN commentator. That being said, the big winner, and this is almost a cliche at this point to say this, but I'm going to do it anyway. The big winner, obviously, that night was Ron DeSantis. Probably the only guy in the room that has the stones, the spine, the capability of going toe-to-toe with a Donald Trump. It's an interesting back and forth that's starting to develop there a little bit, don't you think? I mean, this might be one of the biggest stories in politics in our lifetime, to watch this play out over the next year or so. What are your thoughts on that, and how do you think Ron DeSantis did what he did in building such a machine that could go toe-to-toe with the guy with the cachet of Trump?
Yeah, what DeSantis has done in Florida, you know, for really all of our careers, Leland, we've thought of Florida as a purple state. You know, this is a target state. This is where both parties are going to compete every year. And I think DeSantis has basically turned it into a red state at this point. Mm-hmm. He won by less than a point 4 years ago. He won by almost 20 points this year. His coalition was broad. So I think what he's experiencing right now is a Republican Party that is trying to figure out what is the next evolution. You know, we went from where we were in 12 to the evolution of going down the road with Trump in 16 and 20. But, you know, there will come another evolution here. And is Ron DeSantis going to be that evolution? And I think a lot of voters look at what he's done in Florida and say, this is a guy who's not backing into anything. He's not accidentally doing anything. A 20-point win, flipping Miami-Dade, winning Hispanic voters, all the things he did, That's the kind of positive, you know, movement. That's where you want the party to go. With Trump, look, I supported a lot of what the guy did as president. He also carries a lot of baggage from the things that he should not have done and the mistakes he made. But I think people see DeSantis as giving you all the fighting spirit, but also all the winning instincts.
Yeah.
And none of the baggage, really. I mean, he's not carrying the bags. And this thing that's developing here is Trump wants to go again. DeSantis is probably the future. And whether the party is going to let DeSantis, you know, take the reins here, it is going to be fast. I don't know what's going to happen. I will say this. There's a bunch of other people looking at the race. Some are interesting. Glenn Youngkin, I think, is interesting.
Yeah.
But if you have 10 people running against Trump, he will be the nominee. You know, he is. You know, the fragmentation protects him. If it's a mano-a-mano against the future, sort of the next generation of leadership, I'm not so sure.
Yeah, somebody actually commented on one of my Facebook threads about that today, and I thought it was actually kind of an astute point. There were, what, 12 people in the 2016 race? You give them each 6%, and then Trump wins with 29%. You know, that fractioning of the party it kind of can help somebody be successful. Do you think that Ron DeSantis's brand carries the same weight outside of Florida? It feels like Florida's a good cross-section of America because of that purpleness, right? Like, because it's got strong numbers of minorities, and he wins there. It's got deep liberal strongholds like Miami-Dade, and he wins there. Is that a good cross-section, though, for how a DeSantis could do nationally?
Oh, I think it is, and I think that's one of the reasons he's getting so much steam right now from national Republicans who are looking for the next thing, is because Florida, as you say, contains all the elements that you would need. If you could win all those elements, you'd be very competitive nationally. Suburban voters, urban voters, rural voters. You know, you've got, you know, people up in the panhandle are, you know, some of the most rural voters in America, and then you've got some of the most urban around Miami. It runs the whole gambit, and that's why DeSantis looks like a winner right now, and why Youngkin, frankly, looked like a winner in Virginia last year. You take a blue state that had gone for Biden by 10, and he did the same thing. To me, what they have in common is that they built their own brands, their own identities, and they have not really been part of the chaos or the disappointments that people feel in Washington.
And they've also addressed deep issues that cross party bounds. With Youngkin, it was parents and parental rights and parental authority. With DeSantis, it's that, but it's also COVID restrictions and other issues that cross party lines in terms of the destruction that was wrought by those policies. And I think that's another key part of it, don't you?
Oh, totally. And with DeSantis, you know, one of the best things that ever happened to him was being compared by the national media to Cuomo in New York. And of course, the national media wanted to turn DeSantis into a villain and Cuomo into a hero. And as we now know, Cuomo was one of the biggest villains of the entire COVID debacle, and DeSantis had it right from the beginning. And a state, by the way, with a hefty senior population. I mean, he had a lot of extra, you know, layer of difficulties to deal with, and he handled it beautifully versus some of these Democrat governors that you and I both know deeply abused their authority and restricted unnecessarily the liberties of their people and kept students out of school. Terrible. DeSantis wouldn't do it, and I think Republicans appreciated it.
Yeah, no doubt. Listen, hey, Scott, it's always great talking to you. I appreciate you being willing to come on. Thanks for your time, brother. We'll talk soon.
Thanks, Leland.
All right, Scott Jennings, CNN, political consultant extraordinaire, strong conservative. When we continue, Toys for Tots. They got a special drive coming up. My friend Chris Boyer joins us. We're going to help some veterans, help some kids. 630 KHOW.
Now, back to more Uncommon Sense with Leland Conway on 630 KHOW, Denver's talk station.
Got a cross I do bear. It's a Jesus piece I wear. But I don't know. I don't know if it makes me whole.
Thomas James. Richard Fierro. I'm going to say their names as often as possible today because they're the heroes in the Club Q shooting who took down the shooter and held him at bay until the police got there. They took on a dude who had two guns on him and they beat the snot out of him. Awesome. I'm just telling you right now, Thomas James, Richard Fierro. We will not say the name of that trash scumbag that went in there and started shooting innocent people, but we'll say the names of the heroes who ran towards the danger. 630 KHOW, Denver's Talk Station. I'm Leland Conway. You can text the show directly. 57739. Text Leland to 57739. I'm curious what you might think about the conversation I had with Scott Jennings a while ago. Do you think that, like, a Ron DeSantis has that message that he had in Florida could carry nationwide? And I can tell you right now that if it's him and Trump, it is going to be a fascinating primary, those two. It's like two massive 400-pound gorillas in the same room. One of them's just a bunch older. So we'll see how all that plays out. So, cool things. The holidays are right around the corner. And a couple of weeks ago, we talked to my good friend Chris Boyer, who is with the Honor Bell Foundation, but he's also helping out with some Toys for Tots drive being done by the Marines out at Buckley. And it was kind of cool because we were talking to him last time about them needing some warehouse space, and they were able to procure that. And so now it's game on. Chris is back with us. Chris, how are you, sir?
Great. How are you?
I'm good. So first of all, let's give a little love. You guys were able to procure that warehouse space. I think it was at Ace Hardware that provided you guys with the space you needed to store all these toys?
Yep. Ace Hardware stepped up and donated the space free of charge.
Fantastic. All right. So now, what is next? You got a big place to store all this. Now we got to collect all these toys so kids can have an awesome Christmas. We're going to talk a little bit about a convoy that you're going to do here in just a minute. But first, what's needed right now in this Toys for Tots drive?
New and unwrapped toys dropped into a Toys for Tots box. We've got a bunch of locations out there at the moment. For example, I just by chance had to ran into a gentleman who owns 7 local IHOPs here in the Denver metro area.
Oh, cool.
And they're here in the next couple days. They're going to have boxes at each of those locations.
Okay.
So that'll be easy to find. There is, just kind of spread around here too, a Lone Tree Brewing Company, 105 West in Castle Rock, Peak View on Arapahoe, Behind the Scenes Tap House, DCF Guns in Castle Rock and their Colorado Springs locations, Triple J Armory here in town off Broadway, Family Shooting Center at Cherry Creek, just to name a few, are the places that you can drop them off. And I'll be posting on our, social media pages, these locations too, at Honor Bell.
Awesome.
on Facebook.
So when Chris Boyer is going Christmas shopping for Toys for Tots, don't lie to me now, because I know you do what I do. You go and you buy a present that you want, and then you buy an extra one for yourself. What is it you're buying when you go? Like, what? Because like last year, I was doing something for my parents' ministry down in Arizona, and I went to buy some stuff for some kids that were in need of that. And I spent like, I don't know, an hour and a half in the Nerf gun aisle. And I came out, I was supposed to buy stuff for 2 kids. I'm not going to lie. I came out with 4 Nerf guns, 2 of which I still have in my basement, which I play with my dogs with. So that's you, right? I can see that being you.
Yes, but I'll put a little twist on it. So I'll get similar type items. And also get one similar type items while I'm there for my grandson. So
yeah.
He doesn't have a Nerf gun yet. I know his mom is really not going to be happy about that, nor will the cat. But I'm sorry. I'm a grandpa. I can do that.
Exactly. And any kid that goes cat hunting with a Nerf gun, I'm cool with. That's my friend. I'm good with that.
Oh, my daughter's going to kill me. But
I know, right? I love it. But that's, to me, that's part of the fun is, like, if anybody's listening right now and they're like, okay, we got the big hurdle was the place to store it, and now we got to get a bunch of, because you estimated how many, it was like 100,000 kids are not going to have Christmas this year in Denver if we don't step up and do something here.
Well, and maybe more.
Yeah.
So, you know, these are tough times.
Did you ever have a Christmas that stuck in your memory as being like one of those lean Christmases that, you know, you kind of carried that with you for the rest of your life? I don't know what your situation growing up was, but I've got a couple of those that I remember, but I didn't know if you had one.
You know, growing up as a child, you know, we weren't rich, but
yeah.
You know, we had, I wouldn't even say we're like upper middle class or anything, but our Christmases weren't that fancy.
Right.
But they were always with family and they were always wonderful. So probably the leanest Christmas I had was, sitting in a foxhole in the desert.
Well, there's that.
But I did. I got my coolest Christmas present, I guess, on that day too.
Really?
My dad had mailed me a radio with a cassette player, dual cassette player, so he could send messages back and forth. And
dude, that's...
I opened up the back to...
No, go ahead. I'm sorry. I didn't mean to interrupt. That's awesome.
Oh, you're fine. I opened up the back to see if there's batteries in it, and four jiggers of Jim Beam fell out. So I'm like,
yes!
Thanks, Dad. And it arrived on Christmas Eve too. So,
dude, that's awesome, man. I love it. What yeah. is that? Because I know you do a lot of work with veterans, and you know, especially like with the Honor Bell and all that stuff. You work with folks. What is that like to spend Christmas literally in a foxhole?
Well, I mean, it's lonely.
Right.
No, I guess it would be, if I was to answer it in one word, it's lonely. But and you just kind of think about home and wish you were spending Christmas not in a foxhole, but
yeah,
you know, you make the best of it, and you get those care packages, whoever got them, and you split up all the treats with your buddies and just, you know, make chicken salad out of chicken, the other stuff. So,
yeah. What was your favorite care package item that you got besides the whiskey?
Well, there was always practical things like cigarettes and chewing tobacco and batteries and
yeah.
Sunflower seeds and that kind of stuff. But on my birthday, literally, and the mail was all messed up. You know, could take a week, could take 3 weeks. You never knew when someone was going to show up. But
right.
I was just grateful to get care packages. It was a Listerine bottle that showed up on my birthday.
Whoa.
Literally on my birthday. And it wasn't Listerine in there. It was a Canadian whiskey.
So see, I keep coming back to that. I love it. It's cool.
Well, I had good supporters at home, so
yeah, no doubt. They knew what you really needed. That's what happened there. So let's go back. What is the Toys for Tots convoy we're doing?
So on December 18th, beginning at 11 a.m. and going till 1 o'clock, we're gonna meet at the Max Taps location in Centennial, which is off of Arapahoe Road, just east of Topgolf.
Okay.
So, and it's a really fantastic tap house. The owner, Dave, is a huge supporter of veterans and the Honor Bell. And there's also Nola's Cajun restaurant in there. So there'll be lots of good food. And we have got, oh, and also if throughout the entire month of November, anybody goes into either of the location and gets a Locavore Armistice beer, they make a donation to the Honor Bell Foundation.
Oh, that's awesome.
So we've got a couple of like Jeep clubs that are going to be there. So we'll have a lot of off-road vehicles. Anyone's welcome to bring their off-road vehicle or truck or whatever to help haul toys. And we're also going to have some U.S. Marines there, and they're trying to get permission right now to bring a Humvee, an armored Humvee, so we could probably have them lead the convoy.
That sounds like a lot of fun. So folks can drop these off. You mentioned where they can drop off these toys. You said you're going to put the list up on your social media, so tell people where they can get your social media.
So we're on. Just look up Honor Bell or the Honor Bell Foundation. If you're on Facebook, I'll also post it on Instagram.
Okay.
The other social media sites too, but I usually it'll go up on Facebook first.
Okay. Awesome. Fantastic. Well, it's always good talking to you, Chris. I appreciate what you're doing, not only for your personal service to the country, but also what you do for others who serve our country and for this awesome thing that we're, you know, that you're working on for this Christmas, because there are, you know, times are tough right now for a lot of people, and it's worse than it is in a lot of other years. And so there's a lot of kids who are going to, you know, wake up on Christmas unless we do something, and they're not going to have something there. And I know, you know, it's not even Thanksgiving yet, but we got to do all the work ahead of time so that it's there on time for them. So I just really appreciate what you guys are doing, and let us know how we can help.
It's a joy. I'm a lucky guy to be able to do it, and appreciate your support and all your listeners' support.
Awesome. Chris Boyer, Honor Bell Foundation, working with the Marines at Buckley for Toys for Tots. And I will repost your link once you get that up on social media as well, so people can find it on my social media if they forget where to find it elsewhere. So thanks again, Chris. We'll talk to you soon, my friend.
All right. Thanks a lot.
All right. Have a good one. That's Chris Boyer again, Honor Bell Foundation. And that's awesome, man. I've had some lean Christmases growing up. We didn't have a lot of money. My parents, being missionaries by choice, gave away a lot of what they had. So even when we had normal Christmases for us, it was actually a lot less material than a lot of my peers. And I'm glad for that, right? Because it helps you understand what's really important in all of that. All right, coming up in 4 minutes, the White House giving press conferences today. Apparently it was the Fauci's wave goodbye. And he said some things I think you should hear. Text the show directly, 577-39, 577-39. Jump in the conversation. You can also email me at ihateleland@gmail.com, so you can make that happen as well. We'll continue. 630 KHOW, Denver's Talk Station. White House COVID response director says,
but it's going to take all of us to make that happen. So please, don't wait. Get your COVID shot. Get your flu shot. That's why God gave you two arms. Mm. You can one in each arm if you want.
Yeah.
Go to vaccines.gov. And let's do everything we all can to protect the American people.
That's right. Let's do everything we all can to help Pfizer and Moderna profit. How about
vaccinated
this?
Enough.
This is the Fauci. The Fauci is doing his swan song. You know, he's retiring. He's retiring just in time to not be held accountable for his lies, misdirection, and corruption.
And vaccinated and unboosted versus vaccinated plus boosted. That doesn't mean you shouldn't get boosted, but the real danger is in the people who have not been vaccinated. So that's where we expect, if we're going to see a problem this winter, it's going to be vaccinated.
That's actually, you know what's funny about that? What he just said flies in the face of the science we're supposed to follow. First of all, if you've been vaccinated, or excuse me, if you are not vaccinated, you have had COVID at least once, probably twice, since this whole thing began. If you're already vaccinated, you've probably had COVID four times. And if you've been boosted, you've probably had COVID eight times. So everyone has a level of immunity, and the unvaccinated are not a problem. Secondly, he keeps framing it like
vaccinated
this.
And unboosted versus vaccinated plus boosted. That doesn't mean you shouldn't get boosted, but the real danger is in the people who have not been vaccinated.
They keep doing this. They're trying to frame it as though if you're unvaccinated, you're a dangerous person. Everyone hate the unvaccinated. They're the unwashed masses. I'm so sick of this guy. I'm so glad he's exiting stage left. I just hope he ends up in jail before it's all over. I really do, because he's a liar and he's corrupt. That's the bottom line. He's liar and he's corrupt and he's failed forward his entire career. It's pathetic that the entire nation saw him as some kind of COVID god when his organization funded what created COVID in the first place. And then he tried to cover it up. This dude, no one needs to listen to this dude. No one. You can go get vaccinated if you want. I'm not going to tell you not to do it. I'm not a doctor. I'm not going to give you doctor advice. I am going to say the science tells us that if you have not been vaccinated, you've had COVID, and you have strong natural immunity. If you've been vaccinated, well, you got to keep getting vaccinated to keep that immunity. And it's not going to stop you from getting COVID anyway, because we know this. It's a fact. It's a 100%, 1,000% fact. What a bunch of tools. What a bunch of tools. Speaking of tools, leftists in the state legislature are already planning to come after your guns because they can't let a crisis go to waste. They have to take advantage of tragedy for political gain. David Kopel joins us next, constitutional attorney. We'll talk to him about that and more. 630 KHOW, Denver's Talk Station.